You're tuning into the deep dive because you're keen to understand the forces shaping our world. But let's face it, sifting through endless information is just a drain.
Yeah, it really is.
That's precisely why we're here. Today, we're plunging into Cycles, the Science of Prediction by Edward R. Dewey and Edwin F. Deccan.
What's really striking about this work, you know, even looking back at it now, is its core question. Can we actually discern patterns that help us anticipate the ebb and flow of the economy?
Right.
Dewey and Deccan took a really fascinating route to explore this, moving beyond the usual like cause and effect explanations to investigate the possibility that rhythmic patterns, the kind you see across nature, might also be driving our economic activity.
Okay, so instead of the standard story of this policy caused that economic shift, they're suggesting there might be these deeper recurring beats influencing things.
Pretty much, yeah.
They present their book as a practical tool almost for getting a handle on what might come next by identifying these periodic ups and downs. It's like the economy has its own inherent rhythm we can maybe learn to read.
Precisely. The authors make a, well, a compelling case for shifting our attention from constantly debating the immediate triggers of every economic change to recognizing it and analyzing these repeating rhythmic responses. It's a fundamentally different perspective, really, drawing insights from fields as diverse as biology and even solar activity. For you, our listener, this is about gaining a fresh perspective on the potential order, you know, hidden within the apparent chaos of economics.
All right, let's dive into the core of their argument then, which starts with the existence of rhythms. It seems Dewey and Deccan spent a good amount of time just establishing that these rhythmic patterns aren't some isolated economic phenomenon, right, but are actually quite common in the natural world.
It's quite compelling how wide a net they cast.
Yeah.
They begin by examining growth patterns in, well, everything from tiny yeast cells to larger organisms like white rats and pumpkins.
Wow.
What emerges is this peculiarly characteristic shape, as they describe it, an elongated italic S-curve. They even point to specific illustrations in their book. What these figures show, in essence, is a consistent pattern of initial rapid growth that gradually tapers off as the organism or population matures.
That's interesting. So whether you're looking at the microscopic level or broader populations, there's this similar arc of growth, a surge followed by a slowdown.
Exactly.
And then they bring in Pearl's work on population growth. How does that fit into this idea of economic cycles?
Well, connecting this to our broader understanding, Pearl's research demonstrated that these predictable growth curves could have very practical applications, you know, like in city planning and even in forecasting the demand for essential utilities.
Right.
By understanding the natural growth trajectory of a population, you could make more informed predictions about future needs. So this begins to hint at how recognizing such patterns might be valuable in other areas like, well, economics.
Right. And this leads to the idea of a growth trend. They use a hypothetical business to illustrate this, showing how even a company with increasing sales might experience a decreasing rate of growth.
Yeah, that's a key distinction.
It's not just about the numbers going up, but the speed at which they're growing that tells a more nuanced story.
Exactly. And to really see these shifts in the rate of growth, they emphasize the importance of using a ratio scale, you know, a semi-logarithmic scale.
Ah, okay.
They compare this to standard arithmetic scales using Pearl's charts. The key takeaway here is that a leveling off on a ratio scale provides a much clearer indication of a slowing growth rate than it would on a typical arithmetic chart. You can more easily spot when that initial rapid pace is beginning to diminish.
Then they take this concept of growth trends and apply it to entire industries and the economy as a whole. They present charts covering U.S. merchandise exports, manufacturing output, and specific sectors like iron and steel, railroads, and even newer industries like automobiles, along with coal and copper production.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite revealing to see how these different sectors seem to follow their own distinct growth patterns, with many eventually reaching a kind of upper limit.
What's noteworthy here is the idea of maturity within an industry or even the entire economic system. These visual representations clearly show how that initial phase of rapid expansion eventually plateaus.
Okay.
However, as they illustrate later, even when that overall growth trend levels off, we still observe cycles occurring around that trend line. So even in a mature economy with slower overall growth, there are still periods of expansion and contraction.
Okay, so we're seeing these patterns in how things grow and mature, but Dewey and Deccan argue that these rhythms extend beyond just growth itself.
Absolutely.
They explore cycles and a whole range of other natural phenomena, some of which are quite surprising.
Absolutely. They draw attention to cycles in animal populations, perhaps most famously the roughly 9-14-year rhythm in the Canadian lynx population.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that one.
Yeah, it's a classic example. They also cite similar recurring fluctuations in the populations of grouse and tent caterpillars. It's quite remarkable that different species in different ecological contexts exhibit these seemingly regular ups and downs in their numbers. It suggests some underlying environmental or biological forces at play.
And it's not limited to animal populations. They delve into physiological and psychological rhythms in humans. They mention Hersey's research on fluctuations in human energy and efficiency.
Right, that's interesting stuff.
Recurring patterns in the incidence of diseases like pneumonia and scarlet fever, and even cyclical patterns in human growth itself. It points to a fundamental level of rhythmic activity within living organisms.
What strikes you about these examples, for me, it's the sheer diversity of phenomena exhibiting these cyclical behaviors.
Yeah, me too.
From animal populations to human physiology, it really strengthens their core argument that rhythmicity is a pervasive characteristic of the natural world and not just, you know, a random occurrence in one specific area.
Definitely. And then they move into the realm of solar phenomena, the well-known sunspot cycles, as well as variations in the solar constant.
Mm-hmm.
They even discuss the long history of attempts to find correlations between these solar activities and things like weather patterns and our economic performance.
This is a topic that has been debated for a long time, and Dewey and Dakin acknowledge the complexities involved. While a direct, simple link between sunspot activity and agricultural output has proven, well, difficult to consistently demonstrate.
Right.
They do note some evidence suggesting a correlation between broader solar phenomena and levels of industrial production. This raises the intriguing possibility of external, even celestial forces influencing our economic systems.
They also touch on weather cycles, such as Brückner's approximately 35-year cycle in European weather, and even evidence of long-period fluctuations recorded in tree rings, potentially reflecting these long-term climatic shifts.
Yeah, the tree ring data is fascinating.
And then there's the rather specific 9-14-year rhythm observed in ozone levels and its possible connections to biological cycles. It all paints a picture of a world where different cyclical forces are interacting on various timescales.
Exactly. It creates a sense of an interconnected world where rhythmic patterns are operating across different domains, from the very small to the very large. This comprehensive view sets the stage for their central thesis, that these natural rhythms might indeed be mirrored in and even influence our economic behaviors.
Okay, so we've seen the evidence for rhythms in the natural world. Now we move to part two. Economic rhythms and prediction. After establishing this broader context, Dewey and Dakin turn their attention specifically to the economic sphere.
Mm-hmm.
They reference a significant number of prominent researchers who have also explored the idea of economic cycles, individuals like Persons, Schumpeter, Kondratieff, Mitchell, and many others. This shows they're building upon a substantial body of previous work.
Precisely. They aren't presenting a completely novel idea out of thin air. Instead, they're drawing upon and synthesizing the findings of these pioneering thinkers in the field of economic cycles. They then delve into specific economic rhythms that they themselves have identified through their analysis of historical data.
Let's start with one of the most well-known, the roughly 54-year rhythm, often referred to as the Kondratieff wave.
Ah, yes, the long wave.
They discuss its historical presence in commodity prices, pointing to these long swings with troughs occurring around 1790, 1844, and 1898, and a projected trough around 1952. These sound like very long-term fundamental price movements.
That's right. Their analysis suggests that during the upward phase of this 54-year cycle, we tend to see a general rise in commodity prices, while the downward phase is characterized by falling prices. They even examined European price data and found indications that recoveries or pauses in price trends often coincided with the peaks or troughs of this long wave. Given that the book was written in the mid-1940s, they highlight that the U.S. had been in a generally downward price phase since around 1925, heading towards that anticipated low point in 1952.
Then there's a shorter cycle they discuss, the roughly 9-year rhythm. They point to its presence in general price levels, common stock prices, and even in the performance of individual businesses.
Right.
They emphasize how consistently these patterns seem to align with an idealized 9-year cycle, and the significant price increases observed from 1933 onwards appear to be in sync with the upward phase of this rhythm.
What becomes particularly interesting is how these different cycles can interact with each other. They explain that when this shorter 9-year upward swing coincides with the upward phase of the longer 54-year cycle, it can create a much more powerful upward pressure on prices, a phenomenon they describe as price leverage. Conversely, if these cycles are moving in opposite directions, they might partially offset each other. They also note how wartime price spikes can be amplified or dampened, depending on where these underlying rhythms happen to be in their respective cycles.
That makes sense. They also identify a 41-month rhythm, which they say researchers like Crum, Kitchen, and Hoskins had previously discovered in indicators such as commercial paper rates, bank clearings, wholesale prices, and interest rates.
Mm-hmm. The shorter business cycle.
Dewey and Dakin also found evidence of this cycle in the Federal Reserve Index of Industrial Production and in pig iron production, and they even made projections for this shorter cycle. It seems like there are economic cycles operating on much more frequent timescales as well.
Exactly. These shorter cycles contribute to the more frequent ups and downs we see within the longer-term trends. While the 41-month rhythm might not have the dramatic impact of the 54-year wave, it can still create noticeable swings in economic activity and financial markets.
And then there's a fascinating 18-14-year rhythm in building activity. This one seems particularly well-defined historically in the U.S. and even in other locations like London and Hamburg.
Yeah, the building cycle.
They even point out the tendency for periods of significant skyscraper construction to coincide with the peaks of this cycle.
Yes, the building cycle appears to be a particularly robust and well-documented economic rhythm. They note the low point that occurred around 1933 during the Great Depression and the subsequent upturn, which was partly stimulated by government-funded projects.
Right.
They also show its connection to other economic indicators like pig iron production and the volume of bank loans, highlighting the interconnectedness of these various economic rhythms. Importantly, they also suggest that peaks in building activity can often serve as a warning sign for a potential economic slowdown.
Interesting warning. They even touch upon some other more minor rhythmic patterns, such as a 33-month cycle in residential building, a 23-month rhythm in textile production, and a very short 34-day cycle in raw sugar prices.
Yeah, tiny ones too.
It's as if the economy is a complex organism with numerous internal clocks ticking at different speeds.
Precisely. The economy isn't a single monolithic entity. It's a complex system composed of many interacting parts, each of which may be influenced by its own set of rhythmic patterns operating on different timescales.
This leads us to part three. Understanding and applying these cycles. Dewey and Dakin emphasize that these economic rhythms shouldn't be viewed in isolation, but rather interpreted together like the hands of a clock, as they put it.
Right, seeing the whole picture.
And always in the context of the underlying long-term trend. That makes intuitive sense. The overall economic picture is likely shaped by the interplay of these various cyclical forces and the general direction of growth or decline.
What's particularly insightful here is that they directly address the question that's probably on everyone's mind. What are the causes of these recurring rhythms?
Yeah, finally.
And they're quite upfront in stating that this is a complex and not fully understood area. No easy answers here.
They discuss several different types of theories. First, there are forced oscillation theories, such as Jevons' early idea that sunspot cycles might drive agricultural output and thus the broader economy.
The external driver idea.
They also mention later research exploring links between solar phenomena and business activity. However, they note that while a clear link between sunspots and agriculture proved weak, some correlations were found between broader solar activity and industrial production.
Right. These forced oscillation theories propose that external factors, like changes in solar radiation, might be the primary drivers of these economic cycles. However, as they point out, establishing clear and consistent causal links has often been a challenge. It's tricky stuff.
Then they discuss the inherent rhythm theory, most notably associated with Kondratiev himself, which suggests that these long waves arise from mechanisms internal to the capitalist economic system itself.
Right, like it's built in.
Drawing an analogy to biological rhythms that are inherent to living organisms.
Kondratiev himself didn't provide a detailed explanation of these inherent mechanisms, but the underlying idea is that the capitalist system has its own internal dynamics perhaps related to investment cycles, technological innovation, or social and political changes that lead to these long periods of expansion and contraction.
They also bring up Huntington's perspective, which posits that multiple interacting forces, including weather patterns and atmospheric ozone levels, could influence both biological and human cycles.
Yeah, multi-factor approach.
And then there's Smith's more speculative suggestion of a possible relationship between atmospheric electricity and our psychological states. It seems they're considering a very wide range of potential influences, both internal and external.
It really underscores the complexity of trying to pinpoint the fundamental causes. They even use a compelling analogy. Imagine trying to understand the tides if the Earth had 9 moons, most of them hidden by fog.
Haha. Yeah, that paints a picture.
It highlights how difficult it can be to isolate the primary drivers when there are likely multiple, perhaps even unseen forces at play.
They make an interesting point that these waves we see on economic charts can be thought of as representing the aggregated energy distribution resulting from countless individual decisions and impulses within the economy.
Yeah, the collective outcome.
They even use Galton's quincunx device, you know, the bean machine thing, as an analogy to illustrate how random individual events can collectively create predictable patterns.
That's a powerful way to visualize it. While each individual economic decision might seem somewhat random in isolation, when you look at the collective behavior of many individuals and businesses, these larger patterns and cycles can emerge. It's akin to how individual water molecules move chaotically, but together they form predictable waves in the ocean.
They then introduce the analytical technique of harmonic analysis as a way to break down complex economic curves into simpler sine wave components, much like analyzing the different frequencies that make up a musical sound.
Right, signal processing for economics.
However, they also acknowledge that this is a simplification and has limitations in capturing all the individual variations.
Harmonic analysis is a valuable tool for identifying the dominant recurring frequencies within complex data, but it's essentially a mathematical approximation of reality. It can help us understand the underlying cyclical structure, but might not capture all the nuances and irregularities that are always present in real-world economic data.
Makes sense.
They also mention other analytical methods, such as the Hoskins time chart, highlighting that there are various approaches to identifying and analyzing these rhythms.
They then illustrate how combining long-term trend lines with these multiple identified cycles can provide potentially useful insights into future economic activity. They use examples of a public utility company and another industrial company.
Yeah, practical examples.
Showing how the interplay of these trend lines and cycles can lead to periods of growth and decline. Even with a long-term trend that's leveling off, cyclical upswings can still bring significant periods of prosperity. It's not necessarily a story of constant decline in a mature economy.
Exactly. The presence of these shorter-term cycles means that even within a longer period of slower overall growth, there still be opportunities and challenges arising from these recurring ups and downs. Understanding where these different cycles are in their phases can be a valuable tool for strategic planning, whether for a business or even an individual investor.
Finally, in this section, they address the impact of war on these economic cycles. Their analysis suggests that wars tend to cause temporary explosions of economic activity that push indicators above their underlying trend lines.
Like spikes, yeah.
But these wartime booms don't necessarily fundamentally alter the pre-existing cyclical patterns. Interestingly, they point out that World War II occurred during a downward phase of the 54-year price cycle, which was different from the situation during previous major wars.
This is a really crucial observation. While a major conflict like a war can undoubtedly cause significant short-term disruptions and distortions in the economy, their analysis suggests that the more fundamental, longer-term rhythmic forces tend to persist.
They just keep going.
The fact that World War II's inflationary impact differed somewhat from that of earlier wars might indeed be related to where the long 54-year cycle was in its progression. It adds another layer to think about.
This leads us to the final part of their work, avoiding economic illusions and considering the future. They address the understandable resistance that many people have to the idea that human experience, especially something as seemingly driven by human decisions as the economy, could be influenced by factors outside of our conscious control.
Yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow sometimes.
It's almost like we naturally prefer to believe we're always fully in charge of our destiny.
That's a very natural human tendency. We have a strong inclination to believe in our own agency and control. However, Dewey and Dakin draw upon analogies from the realm of physics, citing thinkers like Eddington on the probabilistic nature of quantum physics, and Minkowski on the relativity of time to illustrate the idea of underlying patterns and probabilities rather than strict deterministic causality. Their argument is that economics might be more about understanding the probabilities inherent in these recurring patterns than about precisely predicting every single outcome based on specific causes.
Right. They suggest that the field of economics would be better served by focusing on identifying and analyzing these recurring patterns and making probabilistic forecasts, rather than getting bogged down in endless debates about the precise cause and effect relationship for every economic event.
Pretty much.
It's about recognizing the likely direction of the waves and understanding their potential impact, even if we can't perfectly explain their ultimate origin.
They also caution against relying solely on simplistic cause and effect thinking when we look towards the future and try to make projections. They encourage a broader perspective, using the analogy of a two-dimensional being confined to a tabletop to illustrate how our own limited perspectives might prevent us from fully grasping the larger forces at play.
Interesting analogy. They briefly touch upon historical parallels across different cultures regarding cycles of war and periods of social upheaval, mentioning thinkers like Spengler and Dr. Lee. However, they also wisely point out the inherent scientific limitations of drawing definitive conclusions from such broad historical comparisons.
Right, gotta be careful there.
While interesting food for thought, these macrohistorical cycles are perhaps more suggestive than strictly predictive.
These kinds of historical parallels can certainly be intriguing and spark further investigation, but as Dewey and Dakin rightly point out, the vast differences in cultural, technological, and political contexts across history make it very difficult to establish firm scientific laws based solely on these kinds of observations.
Fair enough. They then turn their attention to the post-war economic landscape as they saw it, noting the apparent flattening of growth trends in several key areas, including land area, population growth rate, the volume of foreign trade, railroad mileage, manufacturing growth rates, and steel production.
A lot of key indicators slowing down.
This paints a picture of an economy that was perhaps entering a new phase of slower overall expansion, a more mature stage.
What's particularly significant about this observation is their implicit warning that in such a mature economic environment, even relatively mild downturns or recessions could potentially have a more pronounced impact than they did during periods of rapid, robust growth.
Less cushion, maybe.
Exactly. The strong underlying growth that might have previously acted as a buffer might no longer be as powerful.
They acknowledge that there would be a natural temptation, especially after a major global event like World War II, to believe that entirely new and powerful growth trends were about to emerge.
Always hopeful after a crisis.
However, they caution that simply adopting a different economic system or implementing new policies might not automatically create a fundamentally new upward growth trajectory if the underlying cyclical forces and long-term trends remain in place.
Their key point is that long-term growth trends likely have their own inherent dynamics. And while government policies and technological innovations can certainly influence the short-term fluctuations and perhaps even the long-term trajectory to some extent, they may not be able to completely override these more fundamental patterns. These cycles might just be too deep-seated.
They also delve into the challenges of protecting oneself financially in this kind of evolving economic environment, where traditional safeguards like holding cash might be vulnerable to government policies like demonetization.
Yeah, scary thought.
And where real property and even government bonds might not offer the same level of security as they had in the past. It sounds like they were suggesting a need for a more sophisticated and perhaps more diversified approach to financial planning.
They're highlighting the increased levels of uncertainty and the need for individuals and institutions to be aware of the potential limitations of relying solely on traditional investment strategies in a world where both governmental policies and the underlying economic landscape can undergo significant and rapid shifts.
You got to be nimble.
They then circle back to that 18-14-year building activity rhythm, reiterating their projection that it would likely be on a downward trend following World War II, which was a different pattern than what had been observed after previous major wars.
Right, a crucial forecast difference.
This had potentially significant implications for industries closely linked to construction.
This was a key forecast based on their cyclical analysis, suggesting that the post-war boom in building, which had characterized previous recovery periods, might be less pronounced or even absent in the years following World War II.
They also suggest that the turning points in these projected rhythmic patterns around the 1946-1947 timeframe might not be immediately obvious or strongly felt due to the relatively high starting levels of national income and overall economic production in the immediate post-war period.
Right, the momentum effect.
The initial decline might be gradual and masked by overall strong activity.
Exactly. The initial impact of these downward turning cycles might be somewhat muted or delayed by the overall strong economic momentum that existed at the end of the war. It wouldn't be like falling off a cliff instantly.
However, they then offer a more optimistic long-term outlook, suggesting a potential period of constructive accomplishments and renewed prosperity after around 1952.
Ah, so not all gloom and doom?
Based on the anticipated upward swing of several major periodicities, even in the context of generally leveling growth trends. So it wasn't an entirely pessimistic vision for the future.
They're offering a nuanced perspective, suggesting that even within a more mature economic environment characterized by slower overall growth, the interplay of these various cycles could still lead to periods of expansion and opportunity. The rhythm continues, you know.
Finally, they conclude by emphasizing that increased government involvement in the economy is unlikely to prevent the recurrence of rhythmic depressions any more effectively than private sector business planning had in the past.
Ooh, that's a pointed comment.
They also advise against excessive optimism based solely on extrapolating past high growth rates into the future. It's a call for a more realistic and cyclically informed perspective on economic trends.
Their ultimate point is that regardless of the dominant economic ideology or the level of government intervention, these underlying rhythmic forces are likely to continue to exert a significant influence on economic activity. You can't just wish them away.
So as we bring this deep dive to a close, the fundamental message from Dewey and Dakin seems to be that gaining an understanding of these cyclical rhythms alongside the broader underlying trends provides us with a really valuable framework for navigating the inherent uncertainties of the economy.
Yeah, different toolkit.
Even if the precise causes of these cycles remain somewhat elusive.
What's truly insightful for you, our listener, is that this exploration offers a different way of looking at economic events, a perspective that moves beyond simple explanations of cause and effect and encourages you to think in terms of recurring patterns and probabilities.
By recognizing these patterns, even without the ability to make perfect predictions, you can be better equipped to anticipate and prepare for future economic shifts and transitions.
Mm-hmm.
It's about developing a greater awareness of the natural ebb and flow of economic activity.
This invites you to consider, how might these cyclical patterns manifest in your own areas of interest, whether it's your career, your investments, or your understanding of broader societal trends?
Yeah, where do you see them?
The interplay of these natural and economic rhythms is an ongoing area of study, prompting us to continue observing and critically thinking about the forces that shape our world. Something to definitely keep mulling over.
Some truly fascinating insights to consider. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
My pleasure.
Until our next exploration.